Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you'd like to become a Patreon donor yourself, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendsshow.com and you will see the link in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to have an interview with Wayne Galash from Australia. And Wayne is a legend in the bodybuilding world because he has been covering bodybuilding competitions both as a photographer and an author and a judge, and even more importantly, as a videographer. Wayne was videotaping bodybuilders in competitions and doing their posing routines long before anybody else was doing it. His first major contest that he covered was the 1970 NABBA Mr. Universe in London, where Arnold Schwarzenegger won his last NABBA Mr. Universe, defeating Reg Park and Dave Draper, and Frank Zane was in that contest, and Franco and Chris Dickerson, and just a host of bodybuilding superstars. And Wayne has continued, and he is still doing it today. At the age of 80 years old, Wayne is still covering bodybuilding competitions. He's at the Mr. Olympia every year. He's at the Arnold every year. His website is gmvproductions.au because he's in Australia. And Wayne now offers videos through downloads. So he's gone through the whole history of starting off with having Super 8 millimeter films that he was selling. And then he went to VHS tapes and then to DVDs. So Wayne now has the videos available through download and you can just download the videos, which makes it much easier. You don't have to have an order to your house. So makes it very convenient. So anyways, we are going to interview with Wayne today. This is going to be part one of our interview because our interview went a little long. And we're going to talk about how Wayne got into filming bodybuilders. And we'll also talk about some of his most famous videotapes that he's done and some of his thoughts on some of the great bodybuilders that he's filmed over all these years. And when we get done with our interview with Wayne, I'm going to read an article by Wayne, which was called Reflections on the Two Mr. Universe Contest, and this comes from the May 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine with Chris Dickerson on the cover. And Wayne talks about the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe and also the 1971 IFBB Mr. Universe and Mr. Olympia, in which Arnold won unopposed because Sergio was suspended from competing in the show and Franco was also suspended. So Wayne was at both shows. Because the NABBA Mr. Universe, of course, was in London, so he was there covering that. And then Wayne traveled over to Paris, France, and watched the IFBB Mr. Olympia and Mr. Universe that year, which was held by Serge Nubre. That was promoted by Serge Nubre, and Arnold won his second Mr. Olympia. So this is going to be a really good article. I'll read this right after we get done with our interview with Wayne Galash. All right, how's everybody doing out there? I hope everybody is enjoying this hot summer. It is hot all over the world. Weather is absolutely crazy. And we've got the Tampa Pro coming up this weekend, so it's a big week in Tampa. I train at the Powerhouse Gym Athletic Club in Tampa, and we usually get a lot of people coming in. A lot of the competitors are now coming in because they come in early. I've already seen a few. Last Saturday, I saw a couple that were training here. So it's going to be an exciting week for bodybuilding out here in Tampa, Florida. This is the 15th year for the Tampa Pro. I've seen almost every one of them because I moved out here in 2011, and I was out here visiting in 2010 when it was going on. So I think I've seen almost every one of them except for the first four. So should be an exciting event. I'll be there covering it. I'm going to be writing an article for Digital Muscle, and I'll also probably give some play-by-play or some review for RX Muscle. I was on RX Muscle last night, and that is now up on YouTube if you want to check it out. We talked, me and Dave Palumbo and Chris Aceto talked about the recent MPC USA championships, and we had the winner of the MPC USA on the show, only 25 years old, huge kid. I think he was like 245. He said he gained like 25 pounds of muscle in the last year getting ready for this show. So it was absolutely crazy. some real, real freaks out there now, I'll tell you. And some really young guys that are looking unbelievable. What else is going on? Oh, today is August 1st that I'm recording this, and the Pro Physique Challenge Transformation Contest that starts today on August 1st. So I've got a lot more clients. I signed up about 6 more clients last week who are entering this online challenge. So it will run 3 months from August 1st until October 31st. And they give a lot of prize money. I think it's like $25,000 in prize money, and it costs $50 to enter. So I'm not sure if you guys can still enter, if anyone out there is interested, but just go to prophysique.com and check that out. And if you're interested in getting in shape, as I say every week on the show, you can hire me as an online coach, and you can just do that at prophysique.com. I have the direct link to my page right below here in the description, so check that out. I've been putting a lot of stuff on YouTube lately. The last 2 shows we did, which was our 5th anniversary show, I hope you guys enjoyed those. Part 1 and Part 2 were not only on the podcast, but I also put them up on video on YouTube. So check that out when you get a chance. I am working hard to put all the past shows up on YouTube. I know I'm way behind. I think I've got like 20-something shows from last year that I've recorded that have not been put up yet, but I am working hard to try to get those up, as well as get the current ones up, like this one with Wayne Galach, that we will also have that one up on YouTube probably in the next week. So if you're not subscribed to my YouTube channel, it's under my name, John Hansen, so check that out. I didn't get any emails from you guys, so nothing to read there. And I also got the Muscle Maturity podcast going on. A lot of podcasts. Been doing a lot of podcasts, a lot of interviews. So that is the one that I do with Samir Benoot and Nick Trigilli, and this is for Old School Labs. So if you want to check it out, it is on the Old School Labs YouTube page. I think we are on now our 7th or 8th episode. So basically, we just talk about what's going on in the world of bodybuilding, and Samir and myself always bring up some old school stories that we talk about with Nick, who I think Nick is only in his 30s, so he's relatively new to the sport compared to old timers like me and Samir. All right. I think that is all I got, guys. If you guys have any comments, of course, I say this every week. If you have any comments, you can send me emails at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right. Without any further ado, let us get to our interview with Wayne Galach. And this is part 1 of our interview. And like I said, Wayne is going to talk about how he got into the business of filming bodybuilding competitions and also some of his memories of his most iconic videos that he filmed. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with me this week, my friend Wayne Galach, calling in from Australia. And Wayne is legendary in the sport of bodybuilding because he has been filming the icons of the sport all the way back into the 1970s. So Wayne, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John, and it's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, we haven't talked in a couple of years, so it's good to talk to you again. Good to reach out to you. Now, Wayne, you're usually at the Mr. Olympia every year, but with all this COVID stuff that's been going on the last couple of years, you haven't been able to get out there, right?
That's correct. Unfortunately, COVID stopped my international travel, and the last trip was when I saw you at the 2020 Arnold in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And then I haven't been back since then, but I hope to get back to the Olympia this year.
Yeah, okay. That's good. I'll see you out there. I'll be out there in Vegas, too, in December.
Yeah, that'll be good. It'll be like old times back in Las Vegas again.
Yeah. It's kind of weird they're holding it December, but I think they just got I guess the theater where they're holding it at is supposed to be really beautiful. So I think it's supposed to be really, really nice. Yeah. They were supposed to do it there 2 years ago, but then that's when the COVID thing came in. So then they had to relocate to Orlando, and then they've been out there the last couple of years.
That's right, yeah.
Well, Wayne, listen, I'd like to start off just by giving our listeners a little bit of your history. So those that don't know, Wayne has been filming bodybuilding competitions and bodybuilding competitors all the way back into the 1970s. He filmed the 1970 NABBA Mr. Universe in London, England, which was Arnold Schwarzenegger's last NABBA Universe win. And back then, they didn't even allow people to film the contest, if you can believe it or not. So Wayne snuck in with his camera and his lunch bag and was able to film the contest when the people, when the officials weren't looking. So that was the first major show, yeah. Right, Wayne, that you covered, the first big one?
That was the first major show. And let me tell you why they didn't allow cameras in there. Apparently the year before, or maybe 2 years before, that they had allowed the press to come in with video cameras.
Okay.
And then the press did a report that completely ridiculed the universe, and it made fun of the bodybuilders. So after that, the promoter, the boss of NABBA, Oscar Heidenstam, said, "That's it, no cameras. They are a negative effect on our event." So after I did the 1970 filming, and I said to Oscar that I had done it, he said, "Well, in a way, I'm pleased that you did it, because you preserved history that otherwise would have been lost. And how would you like to do it for us every year from now on?"
Wow, yeah. That is really the big thing, is that you are really a part of bodybuilding history, because you were the only one that was around back then who was filming these guys. Yeah. And in the subsequent years, I mean, you filmed Frank Zane in 1972. You filmed Arnold and Franco at a pool in Australia when they were in town to do a guest posing. You filmed a lot of these NABBA Mr. Universe contests that had some of the legends of the sport there. And if you wouldn't have done that, we would only have photographs. We never would have saw like video of these guys at all.
Yes. Well, let's mention the really, really important one. 1971, Bill Pearl versus Sergio. How about that one?
Yeah. How about
that? That was a spectacular. It was a head-to-head battle of absolute champions.
Yeah.
And so many people, a lot of people who weren't at the contest said, they just gave it to Bill Pearl because he was a NABBA legend. But in fact, Sergio was carrying a bit of fluid. He hadn't arrived early enough before the contest, so that on the day he looked fluidy, and Bill Pearl looked sharp and vascular. And so the result on the day was the correct one. And then a week later, Sergio looked absolutely fantastic in Paris when he guest posed at the Olympia.
Yeah. And so I should mention, you've got all of these films on film. I mean, now, when I was like a teenager or 20 years old, they were actually films. Were they 8mm films? Is that what it was, Swain?
Yes, they were Super 8 films.
Super 8 films, yeah.
Right. I saw them up until the end of 82, and then in 83, I changed over to selling on VHS video.
Okay. Yeah, so I actually had to put these on a projector in my house with a screen. I mean, this is how far we're going back, and that's the only way I could see those. I bought quite a few of your. I remember I bought the one where Arnold was like 20 years old in 1967, and he was posing in that garden, that was amazing.
That was probably the first outdoor film that was ever made of Arnold, and that was shot in Wag Bennett's garden in London.
Now, did you shoot that, Wayne?
I didn't shoot that. Tony Gammon shot it and shared it with me. Tony was an Australian Maltese bodybuilder, and he was in London at the time, and then he kindly shared that with me. Then later he went back to live in Malta, where he passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh, really? Okay. Wow. So that was 67, right? That was the year that Arnold won the universe.
I believe it was that year. Yeah. We're going back a long way there.
Yeah, right. I know. But I remember like being a kid, and that movie was so inspiring to me. I'd watch it over and over again because I was around the same age. Of course, I wanted to look like Arnold, so that was a great motivation to see that over and over again, you know?
Yeah, no, it's one of my favorite early movies, and it's a bit of a classic now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you went from Super 8mm movies, and then you went to VHS tapes, and then you went to DVDs, and now you're selling everything by download on your website.
That's right, yes. We've been selling by download. Our first download was 10 years and about 3 months ago.
Oh, really?
And then, yeah, so it's over 10 years. And everything that was always available on DVD still is, because there are some people out there that still like what's called a bit of an old-fashioned hard copy, something they can put on their shelf, just get it out anytime, pop it in their DVD player. So there are still people out there buying DVDs every week, virtually every day. And of course, the majority of people do the downloads because it's quicker and faster, and you have instant gratification with the download.
Yeah. And it's a little bit cheaper too, right? Right, right.
Yes, it's a bit cheaper. That's right, because you're not buying a hard copy and saving on postage.
Right, right. So tell us a little bit about your background, Wayne. When did you get involved with lifting weights, and when did you start? When was your interest in bodybuilding? When did that start?
Well, I started lifting weights when I was 21.
Okay.
And the reason I started lifting was that I was playing squash, and I was right on the edge of the top grade for squash competition.
Okay.
And one of the more local legends of the sport said, "I think you'd be even better if you did a bit of strength training." So I thought, well, hell, what's strength training? So I went to a gym and I started to do training that would assist my sport of squash. And then I soon found that people at the gym were encouraging me to go in a gym competition. And so that's where it started. So I went in one at the gym and I was successful there. And then I thought, oh, look, I'll keep moving up the level of contest. And so that's how it went. And gradually the sport of squash receded a bit into the background, although I did compete at both of them, squash and gym sports, which was bodybuilding and powerlifting. So that all started a very long time ago. And mm-hmm. then from that, I started to photograph people in the gym. They asked me to do photos. They knew I liked photography. And out of that, I got the idea to film the Navi Universe in 1970, because I was going to go to London for a trip to drive around in England and Europe. And so that's how that started. And then it just kept going from that point.
Okay. So did you call up the organizers of the Navi Universe and ask if you could film that contest?
Well, not exactly. I went into their office and I bought my tickets.
Okay.
And I just kept quiet that I was going to film this 1970 Olympia, because I thought, well, if I don't try, I won't ever die wondering what if I'd done it. So I had a go at it. I did it. Luckily, the people in there that were watching for cameras in the audience didn't see me. And then, as I said, from 1971 onwards, I was most welcome. And Oscar said, you can keep doing this for us as our historian for as long as you wish. So then that continued on right up until the year 2010, when it came to an end because they gave the job to a local company in England that was prepared to do all of the regional shows as well as the Universe. And then sadly for me, that was the end of my Navi Universe videotaping career.
Wow. So you did it from 1970 to 2000 and what did you say, 2001?
2010.
Okay.
Yeah. That's about 40 years.
40 years, yeah. Unbelievable. Wow. And you got every year. You recorded every year.
Every year. I loved doing it. People might say, why did you bother? Why did you go so far and spend all that money on the airfares?
Yeah.
Well, I just love doing it. I mean, I look at it this way, that my life has been having the dream job.
Do you think this was your dream job, what you're doing now, Wayne?
Yes, it is, because not only do you see the best contests, the best bodybuilders in the world, you combine it with travel, which I also love. I love to travel to the different countries, because when you do a world championships, for example, with NABBA, that was in a different country and usually a different continent each year.
Yeah.
So that took me to some places from South America to South Africa, to Europe and, of course, Australia. So it's a dream job doing what you love and combining it with travel.
Yeah, yeah. So how has that worked out, like, financially, Wayne? Because I can imagine, you know, sometimes when we pursue our passions, it doesn't really pay off financially. You know, you've been doing this now for so many years, since 1970. So how has that worked out? Has it been a struggle to try to make money from this?
Yes. I look at it this way. If I break even with a contest, particularly a contest where I've had to travel, then that is a victory. Because so many contests I do just for the love of it, where you don't make money, it costs you to be there, and you do it anyway because you don't do it because of the money. You do it because you love recording the history and then sharing it with people, that it makes them so happy. Years after the event, they can buy a contest in which they appeared. So the money side of it is modest, very modest. Here's an interesting fact for you. My travel agent, who I've been with for 40 years, he worked out how much money I would have spent going to contests for airfares and hotels. And you're going to be staggered at the figure.
Wow.
It was over $1 million.
Wow. Seriously?
Yeah, that's serious. That's over 52 years. Now, yeah. That's where the money went. And people think that I get rich because I have all these contests, but I'm rich in spirit, but not in money, because it costs you such to be there.
Yeah.
And then after you come home, you've got to do post-production. You've got to prepare it.
Yeah.
Ready for sale. It doesn't, you know, it's not automatic that it's just suddenly available.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you asked me that. Most people don't know the background of what goes on before you get some wonderful video of a contest that took place, say, for example, in South Africa or some other unusual place where it cost me a lot of money to be there.
Yeah. Like, how are you doing now with your sales and stuff, Wayne? Because, you know, like when I talk to some of these younger people in bodybuilding today, even a lot of the competitors, even the pro bodybuilders, I'm amazed at how many of them don't know the history of the sport. They don't know a lot of the champions that went before. If we go back, I mean, yeah. Lee Haney won the Mr. Olympia in 1984. So, I mean, that's like 30 years ago already, right? And then, you know, Arnold is like 40 years ago or 50 years ago. So, I mean, it is going back now because we're in the year 2022. So, I mean, time has gone by. So, I mean, are people still interested in buying these old contests? Are they still interested in the history of the sport?
Well, the great news is, yes, they are, but it's a certain hardcore group of fans who love the old contests. And this will also surprise you. Some of the most popular old contests are ones from Germany and Europe. People just love those contests. Hmm. I'm not sure why, but they would be the most popular older group of downloads or DVDs from the 80s, 90s, from the German area of Europe. And they just incredible universal appeal. They just go on and on and on. People want them. But a lot of people, younger people in bodybuilding, they don't even know who Grimmick and Bill Pearl were, for example. Those sort of names, unfortunately, are being lost on the younger people because they just don't hear about them these days.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, everybody calls me the historian because I remember a lot of this stuff now, but, you know, I'm yeah. kind of young, I guess, to be called the historian, but now we lost our friend Peter McGuff, and, you know, he was around before I was, so he remembered a lot of these old stories and stuff. And I guess most people just don't keep up with the history of the sport. So that's why I was wondering if people are still interested in watching these old competitions.
Well, there are a few people. Let's say it might be 10% of fans, and that percentage stays pretty constant. Mm-hmm. And these fans are the people that know who Reg Park was, whereas a lot of young bodybuilders today wouldn't even know who Reg Park was. But when I started training, he was the greatest in the world, along with Bill Pearl. And then soon after that, then April came along.
Yeah.
So how many of the young today know that history? I'd say not many.
No, not many. So do you have just like a real loyal fan base that is buying more and more of their stuff and they keep adding to their collection?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. That's what pays the bills and keeps me going and keeps us going. We do have the majority of our customers are regular fans that buy over and over, and some of them write back to buying on film like you used to. I've got a customer in Malta that used to buy my old Super 8 films. So some of them go back like that for 50 years that they've been supporting what I have to offer. And of course, we do pick up new younger fans, and they are often mostly interested in the latest current type of contest, the Arnold Classic or the Olympia or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a mix of people that love the classic older guys, And those fans just are so loyal, and they go on forever.
Yeah. Is there any particular era that's the most popular, Wayne? Is it like the 60s, the 70s? Or I know the 90s is really popular with a lot of younger fans today, because a lot of people consider that the best decade in bodybuilding as far as the bodybuilders.
Well, that's easy to answer. The 80s, 90s are the most popular. Okay. It is the most popular period. Yeah, the 80s, 90s, perhaps going back from the time of Arnold winning the 1980 Olympia, but more so the mid-1980s and all through the 90s. Okay. And that's when they used to have, in the 90s, they had pro Grand Prix all throughout Europe. Do you remember those days? There was the French Grand Prix, the German Prix, the Spanish, the English Grand Prix.
Yeah.
But those days are gone. That's all over now, which is a bit sad.
Yeah, it is. And they had some great bodybuilders competing in that era, because you had like Kevin Lavroni, Vince Taylor, Sean Ray didn't go, but like Lee Labrada, Dorian Yates, of course. You had Paul Dillette, you had Chris Cormier. So you had some really, really, and Nasser El-Sombati, some really great bodybuilders.
And also towards the end of that period, you had Lee Priest doing the Grand Prix all over the place.
Yeah.
That was towards the end of the period. But earlier on, you had McAwee and Labrada, as you said, and Kevin Lavroni won a lot of Grand Prix, so, and Vince Taylor. So they were what I call the magical years.
Yeah, yeah. So what keeps you motivated to keep going, Wayne, after all these years? I mean, it's been decades and decades and decades, and, you know, it's not like you're a multimillionaire from this. I mean, this is obviously a passion project. What keeps you going to do it?
Well, I think it is that, as you said, it's a passion project.
Yeah.
I do it because I enjoy each contest that I'm videotaping. I'm enjoying the contest as a fan, and I'm enjoying it technically so as to not screw up. And the other thing I'm doing, I can't help but be judging at the same time in my head. I'm judging who do I think is the best, who's going to win this. And then I'm comparing my mental judging with the actual results when it comes out. So I never get bored. Every contest, to me, is a new, exciting experience. And that's how I keep going. I never think of it. It's not work. It's just following your passion. I enjoy it when the results are given out, because it's always exciting and it's always different, because you don't have the same people in the same contest in a consecutive way. Everyone is a new experience. So I guess it's a combination of that, enjoying the actual drama of being there, and also I like the travel to have to get there.
Yeah, yeah. I can relate to that. I'm the same as you. I mean, I've been involved in bodybuilding since the late 70s, so it's been a long period for me too. And I still get excited. You know, I still get excited at the contest. And I guess more than anything, I'm just a fan. I'm just a big bodybuilding fan, you know.
You should tell the story about how I asked you to do some interviews for me at the Olympia. And I don't think you'd done many video interviews. And then sometimes we'd come up to a person that you didn't know hardly anything about. And I might have known them from, say, Europe. And I'd give you a few tips on ask them. Do you remember those years?
Yeah, at the Olympia. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
because I think Kenny Castle was the one doing the interviews before, right? And then Kenny passed away, and I reached out to you, and I asked if you needed anybody to help with the interviews.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You took over from poor old Kenny, who he was a fantastic interviewer because he was so passionate.
Yeah.
Remember how he used to get – he was so excited when he did an interview. and he had this – he had a big, deep, booming voice. There's never another person like Kenny Castle, and I treasured the times and the years that I spent with him.
Yeah. I don't think I ever really got to know Kenny that much, but I always remember him at all the contests. He was backstage expediting at a lot of the Olympias, and then, you know, I saw him doing the interviews for you too, you know.
That's right, yeah. I stayed with Kenny in 2006 for a couple of weeks, and that was one of the best periods of my life. The things that we did and the chats that we had, it was absolutely incredible.
Really? Where did he live?
He lived in New Jersey. I just crossed the border from New York State. He lived in a tiny little town. I just forget the name of it, but it was very handy to New York City. And so we would be going there all the time for different things, gym, entertainment. There was the 2006 Night of Champions. And that's the main reason why I was there in 2006. And as you know, Lee Priest won that contest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow.
And that was Lee's last victory in the UFA.
Yeah, yeah. You see how Lee looks now? He's making a comeback. He looks really good. He's dieting.
Yes, I saw the pictures of him with John Bailey receiving an award at Muscle Beach a couple of weeks ago. And I thought he looked pretty big. His arms were huge.
Yeah, his arms are still huge, I know. Hey, Wayne, tell me a little bit about the editing process that goes in, because I know, like, with the videos that I do on YouTube, when I interview somebody, I'll edit and I'll put, like, pictures and video clips and stuff. And I don't think people understand how drawn out of a job that is. I mean, sometimes I'll work for 12 hours on a one-hour interview. So I can imagine when you're at these contests and you're filming all this footage, hours and hours and hours of footage, it's got to really be a job when you get back home and you got to edit it all, right?
Yes, well, that's right. What happens is this. I do the basic edit when I get back. In other words, that means leaving out all the bits that I don't want, tightening it up, working it out into, for example, when you have a very long contest, you can't offer a very long download because it's too difficult to download. So then I work out the cut points that it might be offered in three parts as a download, 1, 2, 3. Okay. And each part could be, for example, between 60 to 90 minutes long. So when I've done all the preliminary work, I then hand it over to our technical expert editor, and that's Ollie Park. And then Ollie does the fine tuning. He adds things, titles, prepares it for the download, and also does the authoring for the DVD copy if we think it's worthy of putting out the DVD. So he does all the fine tuning that is the final stages. And it always takes him and takes us longer than you expect it to. And as you said, 12 hours, that can easily be eaten up just doing one project.
I know. It's unbelievable. Now, the contests have really changed a lot, Wayne, since the old days when they just had bodybuilding. So now they've got all these different divisions. And if you go to the Arnold or you go to the Olympia, if you're going to be in the expo or filming the prejudging or wherever it's at, I mean, you're going to be there for hours. Do you ever get tired or, you know, wiped out from doing all that footage?
Well, yes, I do. And so in this more recent year, talking about the last, say, 5 years, I've always made sure I've got a reserve cameraman with me that if you happen to feel poorly, I remember one year I started to feel dizzy because it had gone on so long. And so I went and got some food. And that was during an amateur Olympia in Las Vegas. And so my deputy cameraman took over and he was fine. I went and got some food. I walked around the casino and I came back and then I was fine, pissed it off.
Yeah.
But the worst contest I ever did was in Europe, in Austria. And it started late in the day and it didn't finish until after 4:30 a.m. the following morning.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that is the absolute truth. So I walked back to the hotel after the contest with my equipment and I got into the hotel at 5 o'clock.
Oh my God.
And the manager said, well, we're not quite ready to serve breakfast. And I said, that's okay. I'm not here for breakfast. I'm here. I've just come home. I'm going to bed. So that was the worst that was the toughest contest ever that I can remember because it started late in the afternoon. And it had probably 250 competitors, and it just dragged on and on and on. So that was going back about 15 years. But generally speaking, I get through the contest these days without any trouble at all, I'm pleased to say.
Wow. Now, a lot of people may not know this, but you were also a judge, right, at the NABBA Universe for many years?
Yes, I did judge there from between 1972 up until 1986, and I didn't judge every year. but I judged whenever they asked me. And the very first year, 1972, that was the year when Frank Zane won.
Yeah.
So that was an awesome experience. And at the end of the judging, they used to rate the judges to see who was the most accurate judge. Now, you never hear that happening these days, do you?
No.
They just don't do that. Because the judges' identities these days aren't generally revealed next to the markings or placement. But back then, you were named who you voted for, where you placed them, and that would be in the magazines. Health and Strength magazine, and my one hope was that I was not going to be the worst judge. So anyway, they rated all the judges as to how accurate their marks were to the final results. And so I do remember that I came in second place, and I was pretty happy with that because I felt that I hadn't screwed. So then in 1986 when I judged, and that's when Charlie Claremont won. He won the Amateur Universe.
Yeah.
And this meant that because I was shooting video from 1983 onwards, I had to have somebody else film the prejudging because you can't be doing video and judging.
Yeah.
So after that contest, I decided that my judging would be over because I wanted to shoot the NABBA Universe prejudging myself from that year on, which is what I did. And so I haven't judged officially since then, but when I'm at a contest, I'm unofficially judging, like I said, because I love to see if my thoughts are going to be similar to those of the judges with their final results.
Yeah.
And I guess you must do that sometimes as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was judging also myself back in the 80s in Chicago, so it's a hard job to judge. It's not as easy as a lot of people think, you know.
Yes, because you don't want to let anybody down because you could be making an influence on their career. And you don't want to make a bad decision that might hurt somebody badly. So, yes, it's a very responsible job.
Yeah, especially with the NABBA Universe. I didn't realize you were doing it in those years. I mean, those are really some iconic years from 72 to 86. I mean, you really saw some legends of the sport. Of course, you missed Arnold. His last one was 70.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you saw Frank Payne. You saw Chris Dickerson, Boyer Coe. And then you saw Serge Noubre, right? Bertel Fox, Dave Johns, Tony Evans, all those guys too, right?
Yeah, and there was an American guy called Ron Thompson. Do you remember that name?
Sure, yeah. 1974, Mr. America.
Because I remember him very well at the Universe. I thought that he should have won his class, but he didn't. So things like that stick in your mind. You just never forget.
Yeah. Do you remember the one where Serge Noubre got second? Did he get second to Tony Emmett in 1977?
He got second to, I think it was Bertel Fox, wasn't it? It was one of those years. He was beaten by Bertel Fox in the pro. And then afterwards, he claimed to Oscar Heidenstam that it was rigged against him because all of the British crowd were screaming for Bertel. I think you're referring to that.
Okay.
And he felt that he hadn't been judged fairly because the audience influenced the judges. And he asked Oscar Heidenstam to reverse the decision and place him first. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, he actually asked Oscar to reverse the decision. Wow.
He asked him, would he reverse the decision because he said it was unfair.
Jeez, unbelievable. Wow.
That was a once only thing. I've never seen anything like that in all my years of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
That particular experience, simply incredible.
Yeah. Well, now that you brought that up, let me ask you a couple names from those years and just get your thoughts on it. We'll start with 1972 with Frank Zane. That had to be one of his best shapes ever. So what did you think of Zane when he was on stage?
Well, I thought this. As soon as he walked on stage, I knew he had won it.
Yeah.
It was clear because he had the perfect combination of symmetry, the right degree of definition. Although he wasn't huge, he looked quite big because he had these small joints. So he had a package that was clearly the winner. And from then on, it was a matter of, well, who's going to be second, third, fourth.
Yeah.
So that one was an easy decision when he won in that particular year. I think 72 was the best that Zane ever looked at NABBA, but then he continued on competing up until, what, 83?
Yeah, 83. And
he had a slightly different look as he got older.
Yeah.
Maybe he was even more defined.
Yes.
But the other thing that stood out in 1972, because I filmed him in a park on the day that we went to the NABBA Universe Finals. It used to be an afternoon show for the finals, and they would judge it the day. So we did this filming in the park, and I said to Frank, look, a roll of Super 8 film runs for about 3.5 minutes. How are you going to go for doing the posing routine? He said, don't worry, we'll pose continuously for 3.5 minutes, and I'll completely fill your film. And that's exactly what he did.
Wow. So he posed for 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, without any break, any clear duplication of poses. It was just fluid from beginning to end, 3.5 minutes of, wow, pure pose mastery. He was a master poser.
Yeah, he was. And tell me that story about when you guys went into the park. Wasn't the park like locked or something and you had to find your way to get in there?
Yeah, that's right, yes. It was a private little park in Hyde Park Square, which is very central in London.
Okay.
And it had a low fence around it, a gate. And a guy that was helping me, who had a house on the square, didn't have a key to the gate. So we just jumped over the gate and went into this little park and did our filming.
Yeah.
And there was no problem. Nobody came complained. It was just sort of the way things were back then. Things were pretty easy going.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect background. It was lawn and trees and buildings in the background. You can probably remember the background of apartments and trees and stuff. It was a lovely background. And I filmed many bodybuilders in that park. And some years, so I did have access to a key, so I didn't have to jump over the gate.
And weren't you guys on your way to the finals when that happened, when you decided to stop and film?
Yes, that's right. Fran and I, when we finished doing the shoot, we caught a taxi together and we went into the finals. And then a couple of hours later, he was announced as a professional Mr. Universe for 1972.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, I love hearing stories about people who saw these guys in their peak on stage, you know, like Frank Zane, because believe it or not, Wayne, I mean, I hear bodybuilders talk today and they'll talk bad about Frank Zane. They'll say, how did this guy ever win Mr. Olympia? He was so skinny. I don't understand it. And they weren't there. They didn't see how great he looked in his time, you know, and how he looked on stage. I saw his Mr. Olympia win. So I can attest to how he looked. And you were right there seeing him up close, being a judge in the contest and seeing him, because, you know, when they did this judging at the NABBA Universe, the guys were right there in front, and you saw how he looked.
Yes, the judging would take place on the Friday, and the show for the presentation, or finals as it's now called, that would take place on the Saturday afternoon. And that's how they did it that way for many, many years. And then later on, they transitioned and made it happen all in one day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me ask you about Chris Dickerson, because he's another guy that gets picked on by today's bodybuilders, and they're like, he was the worst Mr. Olympia ever, and, you know, he didn't have any biceps, and how did this guy ever win Mr. Olympia? But again, this is another guy who was a master bodybuilder, a great bodybuilder, and you saw him up close as well.
I did, and I've been analyzing how and why he won. And when you saw him on stage, he just looked like physical perfection from the top to the bottom. Fantastic calves, good symmetry, always good condition, superb posing. And when he walked on stage, he held himself and acted like a winner. So he had that little touch of charisma that made him stand out. And when you think about it, the people that he he beat. Back in those days, there were no Dorian Yates's or Ronnie Coleman's.
Right.
So he was the best of the best of the type of physique that he had to beat at that time.
Right.
And so we shouldn't measure him against people of today, because you're talking different eras.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I always make the point that, you know, Dickerson was a champion in the AAU, in NABBA, in the WBBG, and in the IFBB. I mean, if you look at all the titles he won in all those organizations, are you telling me that all these judges didn't know what they were doing? I mean, these were the best judges in the world at the time, national and international judges, and they all put him first place in so many of these competitions. The guy obviously was a fantastic bodybuilder.
Yeah. Yes, he was. The modern fans of today just don't fully understand that and never saw him at his peak.
Right.
And he was just a phenomenal bodybuilder. And the only thing that would beat him occasionally would be the size of his arms or his biceps, but everything else was pretty well absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the point you made about his symmetry was so perfect. His skin was so perfect. You know, he had those great legs, those incredible calves.
Yeah.
The way he stood on stage, he was, you know, his definition and his conditioning was always so good. I mean, he was a fantastic bodybuilder.
And his posing. So the way he displayed him, he had a flawless display. And he always, as I said, looked and acted the champion.
Yeah.
And I hardly ever saw him defeated, in fact. He would beat the best of the best at the NABBA Universe. And then, of course, he was runner-up in 1980 at the Olympia. And then I was there when he won the 1982 Olympia in London at Wembley.
Yeah, yeah. Did you think he deserved that year win in 82?
I'll put it this way. I had seen him look a little bit better. He was pretty much towards the end of his career when he won in 1982. It's hard to say that he didn't deserve it, but it was like as if he was winning it because they knew that he deserved to win it because he'd just missed out a couple of times before. So I felt there was a little bit of that in it, a bit of sort of sympathy for him. But he had looked better when he was a bit younger, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. What about Boyer Coe? Because Boyer was a big name in the NABBA universe for many years. I think he won the universe four times. So this is another great bodybuilder to see in person.
Yes, I would have been a judge at least on one of his victories. Boyer Coe, he had these fantastic arms. He had a sweeping sort of a style on stage, and he had virtually everything except he didn't have a six-pack.
Yeah.
I mean, his waist was small, but that was, of course, his weakest area. If somebody had everything he had and they had a good set of abs, well, then, of course, boy, you would get second.
Yeah.
But most of the time, people couldn't match him in his overall package that he presented. And that was sufficient for him to win all those NABBA Universe titles.
Yeah. And he was one of those guys who really came alive when he posed. I remember when I saw him at the Olympia, every year I saw him, he was in fantastic shape, but his posing routine was so great. I mean, he would get the crowd so excited when he posed because he hit these signature poses that only he could hit. And he knew how to really display his body to the best, you know?
Yeah, he did. He had what I called a sweeping posing style, and you got caught up in it because it was an exciting style to see.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Wayne Galash for joining us. We will have, of course, part two of our interview with Wayne next week on the show. And I also want to thank our Patreon sponsors for helping keeping the show going. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor yourself, just go to our website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link to join and become a Patreon donor. We also have the link listed in the description below. So either one of those, just sign up for that. I really appreciate the people that are helping keeping the show going. And I'm giving something back to them by sending them videos and articles each week as part of being a Patreon sponsor. All right. So before I let you guys go, I want to read this article. I haven't read an article in a couple of weeks, so we are back to reading the articles. This one is called Reflections on the Two Mr. Universe Contests, and it is written by our guest today, Wayne Galash,
And this was in the May 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine. So it says, this year I had the privilege and pleasure of being able to compare both Mr. Universe shows and their judging, as the NABBA contest was held in London, as usual, and the IFBB show was held in Paris for the first time. It is not my intention to enter into the politics and controversies which seem to surround top contests, nor to say that one show was good and the other not so good. I merely wish to pass on my observations and comments as an impartial observer, and any criticism is, I hope, constructive. The first show was in London, organized by NABBA, which has been connected with the contest since 1948, in conjunction with Health and Strength magazine. A full day is devoted to the judging, which is held in a large hall the day before the show. This gave many people the chance to see the top physiques, as all tickets for the show were sold out months beforehand, with hundreds missing out. It's unfortunate that a larger, suitable theater is impossible to find in London. Highlight of the judging was possibly the grand entrance of Sergio Oliva, resplendent in specially tailored suit and hat, looking like the mythical Hercules. No one had actually seen Sergio in the flesh before, and this is why he sent a ripple of excitement through the large crowd. Pearl and Park had, of course, been many times before, and Waller was unknown in England except by his photos. Slight disappointments were the non-appearance of Arnold S. and Casey Viator. In the case of Arnold, many pressures were placed on him, which no doubt caused him not to enter. I was disappointed personally in not seeing Casey, as it has been a tradition for the current Mr. America to compete, and I had looked forward to seeing this sensational young star. Each man posed individually and had as long to pose as he wished. First to pose was Frank Colombera of Australia, Iron Man cover man in May 1971, and he was vastly improved from last year with terrific muscularity, natural tan, plus good posing. The biggest surprise in this, the short class amateur, was Elias Petsis of South Africa. Last year he was big and smooth, but this time he was big and cut to ribbons, with massive 19-inch arms and a dynamic posing routine. I felt his legs were not quite up to the standard as his upper body, but he had tremendous impact. It was nice to see Chuck Colris, together with his great set of abdominals, on this, the first time in London. Chris Dickerson, the defending short class title holder, was the true master. Every pose was perfection, and he reminded me of a smaller Bill Pearl. Chris was improved over last year, being much more muscular, together with excellent abdominals. I feel it was only Waller's extra height which beat Chris, as this was the first time Chris has lost to Waller in seven contests together. Speaking with Chris, I found him to be a fine gentleman, extremely intelligent, and a man of all Americans can be proud of as the first colored person to win Mr. America. The medium height class amateur was a battle between the two West Indians, Al Beckles and Roy Callender. Al, of course, lives in England and is the current Mr. Britain, and he displayed his phenomenal 21-inch arms and great back and muscularity to perfection. As he tenses his biceps, a second peak seems to form on top of the lower biceps, and this shows a further split through the middle. I have never seen arms like these, and I would rank Beckles and Arnold's arms as the best in the world today. Callender was impressive and also posed his arms well, although he was a little bulky, while Peter Caputo was well-defined but appeared rather light. Warren Fredericks impressed me with his great definition and upper body, and his posing routine was different and most effective. The tall class amateur was down in numbers with no Europeans present, but it did not lack in quality. A great battle took place between Ken Waller and Paul Grant of Wales, with both men in their best ever shape and with similar physiques. When posing side by side, Grant had an edge in abdominals and muscularity, while Waller had the greater shoulder width and arms, which gave his physique that polished look of perfection. He was a great winner, and I hope that his comment that he would now retire is not correct. Third place man Dennis Wilkins of England had made tremendous improvement from last year when he was unplaced. He has a nice shape for a tall man with unusual vascularity in the arms and forearms. Professional class two was a decisive win for Zane, who looked better and more defined than last year when he won the amateur title. Zane's whole presentation, from grooming to posing and standing correctly in the lineup, is perfection. He epitomizes the more slender, graceful type of physique, and one wonders how the judges compare his type of physique with that of Pearl, which is completely different. No doubt proportion and personal preference would be major points when both men have developed their particular type of physique to its ultimate. Kasim Yazbek of Syria also had a unique and graceful posing style, which displayed his amazing abdominal to perfection. The professional class one provided the clash of the century with Pearl, Sergio Oliva, and Park all competing against each other for the first time. It was once said that top men, and Pearl in particular, would not compete against other top men. This was proved incorrect, and Pearl gave notice 12 months ago that he was laying his reputation on the line and making the London show his last contest before retiring. Park reminded me of Zayn with his slimmer, more defined physique, but this was not the Park of old with the terrific shoulders, arms, and calves. Sergio looked huge and has great impact or shock value on the audience with his spectacular posing routine and giant proportions. The V shape was amazing, as were the shoulders and triceps, absolutely the biggest I have seen. However, size is not everything, as it is the fine points which separate great physiques such as Pearl and Oliva. Pearl was a complete master, calm, relaxed, and yet fired up enough to give his usual devastating posing exhibition, even though he hasn't been in a contest for over 3 years. Naturally, the fans went wild, as most of them, myself included, didn't think Pearl could reach this degree of defined perfection at the age of 41, after 20 years at the top in the physique world. Pearl told me he weighed 238 pounds, which was the heaviest weight he has ever competed at, and he was also the most defined he has ever been. This was achieved only by a tremendous training effort and a diet so strict that the latter stages had seemed almost like torture. Perfect proportions, muscularity, and an amazing midsection were the reason for Pearl's win, which was quite unanimous. While I felt that Sergio was a few pounds too heavy, especially in the thighs, and lacked the abdominal separation and roundness of bicep as shown by Pearl. The next day, at the show in the Victoria Palace literally ran like clockwork and was the usual smooth professional presentation one has come to expect in London. Various top-class variety acts were included, and my only criticism is that they tended to be too long, causing the latter stages of the posing and presentation to be hurried. I would have preferred to have seen a little more of the physiques rather than the fill-in acts. Pearl and Waller made it a double win for California, and the theater literally shook with applause as these very popular winners were announced. Park was a true sportsman and shaking hands with Bill, his longtime rival. I pay tribute to Pearl, a great physique and a great man, in this, his farewell appearance. The Paris IFBB Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia, which was held 1 week later, organized and staged by Serge Dubré, this was his first big show, and under the circumstances, he did a good job, as Serge was in no way connected with the judging indecisions and controversies which would take place. I could not see the point of excluding certain physiques who had come to Paris to compete because they had recently competed in contests run by other organizations. I believe that a contestant should be free to enter all contests, especially if he's an amateur and not earning his full living from physical culture. Franco Colombo was barred from entering after a protest by some countries, and I was also disappointed that Sergio Oliva was not able or allowed to compete against Arnold in the Olympia. The judges placed a time limit on each man's individual posing, and as some of the judges were from small countries and had never seen or judged world-class physiques before, I felt it was asking a lot of them. In the short class, Giuseppe Diana of Holland, formerly from Italy, was the clear winner and a degree of definition the most amazing I have ever seen. His arm movement caused a ripple between the paper-thin skin on his upper body. Excellent posing rounded out a faultless physique and presentation. The medium height class proved to be the most exciting and controversial. It appeared to be a battle between Al Beckles from London and Ed Corney of California. These two stood out above the others, and Corney had great calves, abs, and traumatic posing, while Beckles had the best arms and back, together with great definition and exciting, forceful posing. However, a very disappointed Corney was called forward for third place, followed by an amazed Beckles for second. I couldn't believe the MC had made the correct announcement, nor could Beckles, who did not move for some time. Ahmet Anulu of Turkey was then announced the class winner among scenes of confusion on the stage and great hostility in the audience. I pay a tribute for the sportsman to Ahmet, who then mounted the second place position on the rostrum, placing the first place trophy on the vacant winner's position. At this point, pandemonium reigned as the audience of approximately 2,000 commenced to stamp and shout, "Beckles, Beckles." I feared that a riot may break out. The Turk knew he was not the best physique, and in fact, Blind Freddy could have seen that Beckles was clearly the best man. After some embarrassing deliberation backstage, the judge's decision between first and second was reversed, and amidst tumultuous applause, Beckles was acclaimed the winner of the class. This may have been the first time ever that the judge's decisions have been overruled on stage on protests from the audience. The tall class was packed with interest as top Germans Karl Blumer, the recent IFBB Mr. Europe, and Helmut Reidmeier were competing, plus Mike Katz and Vic Downs. I was disappointed in Katz as he was rather big and smooth, and he lacked the muscularity evident in most of his photos. His chest is amazing and, in fact, unique. Vic Downs was very muscular and in terrific shape for a man of 40. This was his last contest, as he told me he's opening his own studio now in Brampton, Ontario. Reidmeier has beautifully shaped arms and upper body, but still too light in the legs. Blumer, who won the class, is a true professional in the way he presents himself. His sparkling personality and big smile, backed up by an extremely defined physique and effortless posing, earned him the decision. I felt that Downs deserved to be much higher than fifth, but that is history now. The guest posers were Colombo and Oliva. Franco was very polished and dynamic, being heavier than when I saw him last year, yet just as defined. Sergio had lost a few pounds since London, and being sharper, he looked much more impressive. He received possibly the greatest applause and delighted the crowd with his sense of comedy during his encore. Al Beckles was the new class winner. A rejudge hastily took place on stage to find the overall Mr. Universe winner. Beckles posed like a man possessed, and he received a clear majority over Blumer to take out the title to the complete satisfaction of 99% of the audience, who felt that justice had finally been done. The Olympia was something of an anticlimax, with Arnold winning a one-horse race against two other men I never heard of. The great Arnold was a shade lighter and more defined than he was last year, and one felt he would have won just posing in a sweatsuit. Not much more one can say about Arnold Suzique, with five Mr. Universe titles already and possibly years ahead of him. The question many people have asked me is a question that will be asked repeatedly for years to come. Would Arnold have beaten Pearl in the London Universe? As I do not possess the wisdom of Solomon, I cannot give the correct answer. The only way to judge two great physiques is side by side, and maybe Pearl's maturity may have outweighed Arnold's arms and muscularity. I would not wish to pass judgment on these two men, whom I rate as the greatest physiques the world has seen. I leave the answer to the personal preference of you, the reader. The end. Wayne did not go on the limb there and make his prediction. I think Arnold would have beaten Pearl myself because I think he was so defined. But man, what a great show that would have been to see Arnold and Bill Pearl finally competing against each other. And if you heard our fifth anniversary edition of our show, part one, a couple of weeks ago, I had an excerpt of our interview with Peter McGuff and Wayne Galash when I went to Peter's house a couple of years ago in 2018. And Peter said that he interviewed Arnold, and Arnold was very disappointed that he never got the chance to compete against Bill Pearl. So, man, politics really ruined what could have been a great contest. But very interesting article, that part about Beckles winning the Universe. I remember reading that before, too. I think I read that in Muscle Builder, where the judges made a mistake and they put Amin Anulu in first. And I believe the story I heard was that Beckles went backstage and started getting dressed. He didn't even accept his award. And then they came back and told him he'd have to come back out on stage. And I think he came back with his pants on. Although I've never seen pictures of that. I heard that Albert came back on stage with his pants and got his award. So I don't know if that's true or not. But that was pretty funny. And it's interesting, Ed Corney won the Universe the next year when it was held in Baghdad, Iraq. And that was the one that was covered, of course, by the book Pumping Iron. And that's where Ed is on the cover of the book Pumping Iron when he won that Mr. Universe. So it's interesting. He was really good condition here. It sounds like he should have been second. He got third. And then he won next year. And Mike Katz was off shape this year. It sounded like he was condition was not good. And he did win his class at the Universe the next year. And I believe 1972 was also the year where he beat Waller. He beat Waller in the Mr. World because Waller was off. And Waller, of course, went on to the IFBB after this contest, after the NAVA Universe. It's interesting. Waller was an AAU guy. He was always in the AAU competitions, and he was in the America for many years. And he took second to Chris Dickerson in 1970. And he would have been the favorite to win in 1971, but they did not allow him to compete in the 71 America because they said he was paid for an ad by Joe Weider and he was a professional, so he could not compete in the AAU Mr. America, which was an amateur contest. So as a result, Waller went over to the NAVA Universe and he won that. And then after that, he competed in the IFBB. So that was interesting. And that was a big win for Ken Waller, where he beat Chris Dickerson, because like the article said, that was the first time in seven competitions together where Waller actually beat Dickerson. And some say that this was Arnold's best shape ever at the Olympia. And there is another article in here, which I will probably read for you guys next week. It was written by Frank Zane, and it's called Arnold as I Know Him. And it's got two unbelievable pictures of Arnold from 1971 when he guest posed in Belgium. And I believe this was right after winning the Mr. Olympia contest in Paris. So both Frank and Arnold were guest posing, and Christine Zane, who was Frank's wife, took the pictures of Arnold. And these are some of the most iconic pictures ever of Arnold. So very interesting stuff. And I've got some great old magazines that I'm going to be sharing some articles with you guys as we keep going with this podcast. As we now start going into our sixth year, right? We are now heading into our sixth year of the podcast since we just celebrated our fifth anniversary. All right, guys, thanks for continuing to support the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. We will be back next week with part two of our interview with Wayne Galash, and I'll give you an update of what happened with the Tampa Pro. So stay safe out there, keep training hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.